Hello and welcome to this episode of JISC's Beyond the Technology series, in which we'll be discussing how AI can support and enhance creativity. My name is Tom Moule, Senior AI Specialist at JISC, and today I am joined by Dr. Rebecca Thiessy, Subject Leader in Media and Critical Studies at Bath Spa University, and Eugene Tse, Master Student at the Manchester School of Architecture and a Brand Ambassador for Adobe. Both Rebecca and Eugene are experienced users of Adobe Firefly, a tool that uses AI for image generation. So first, Rebecca and Eugene, please could you introduce yourselves, say a bit about your experience in this area, and give your initial thoughts on how AI can support and enhance creativity.
So firstly, yes, I am Rebecca Thiessy. I am Subject Leader in Media and Critical Studies, but I just wanted to be really clear that everything I'm saying today, I would hate for the listeners or anyone looking to follow up, I would hate for them to think that what I'm saying is somehow unique to my subject, unique to media, unique to sort of that particular more obvious leaning towards creativity, a reflection and creative practice. It's really important, of course, to have Eugene here talking to us about architecture, and we've had some fantastic conversations about sometimes and some of the things that we think we're saying and doing. It's as if we're actually on the same course. So in terms of my day-to-day use of Firefly, I'm just going to pick out a couple of key areas, if that's maybe useful for a conversation, useful for an icebreaker. Firstly, I think it's really powerful to use in Welcome Week. And I think having access to the Adobe Creative Campus very early on in the university student experience, I think is incredibly important. You know, it demystifies it. It makes it very clear that it's there as part of a widening learning and teaching set of tools. Certainly nothing to be kind of fearful of or kind of anything that really needs to be kind of mystifying in any way. So we use it in a slightly, am I allowed to use the word cheeky sense, because we invite students in to do some really kind of cool creative posters and their experiences of Welcome Week. However, even though the students are obviously learning about how to use a particular piece of software and they are learning about kind of the importance of creativity and messaging, actually, what we really love about the Adobe Firefly in that particular situation is it gets the students talking. It gets them sharing. It gets them thinking about kind of what sort of language, what sort of terms, how far can they push those prompts? So yes, it is about creativity. Yes, it is about understanding the power of communications through, you know, visual aids, visual platforms and semiotic signs and codes conventions. But actually, in that particular moment for that particular week, as part of our kind of broader welcome and inductions, it's really a slightly fun, engaging, entertaining way to really get students having those conversations where otherwise they may have both sat on a laptop and barely spoken to each other. So that's, I think, really important, turning it into kind of a conversation piece. In terms of beyond that, it becomes a really central part of our assessments. We've moved away from exams and much more recently moved away from essays and dissertations. We keep the rigor, we keep the robust nature of all of our assessments, and we maintain really strong learning outcomes, but we actually do lean into creative forms for students using podcasts such as this, using kind of zines or kind of, you know, the power of kind of InDesign and Express even for poster design, and bringing Firefly all the way through that in terms of them understanding the power of communication. Thinking about how to communicate doesn't necessarily need to sit within an essay. So perhaps I've said too much. I can see Eugene nodding at certain parts of that. So maybe I will hand over and let's see where media and architecture combine.
Yeah, thanks, Rebecca. So my name is Eugene. As Tom introduced me, I'm in my first year of my master's at Manchester School of Architecture. As a creative student, I'll be sharing how AI has changed my design workflows. And I can also show some parts of how it's reshaping the creative industry, and how it's also supporting me as a student. It'll be quite interesting conversation to see how it differs from a tutor's perspective and a student's perspective in the use of AI, as well as also sharing some ways that MMU, Manchester Metropolitan University, is tackling this rise in AI. Also touch on some of the challenges, particularly about ethical AI as well. And as a student ambassador at my university, I also take pride in exposing my friends, sometimes even tutors in the world of AI, such as the use of Adobe Firefly and Express. I really like the way Rebecca has also introduced the ways in which she has used Adobe Firefly in trying to create conversations. That's a really strong use of AI in trying to just not use it academically, but also use it to spark conversations. the way that I've also seen AI is that it also allows easier creative creation. So not AI is not just for people who are creative, but also people who aren't in this creative field. So one of the best uses of AI I've experienced was during a Sip and Paint event, which was organized by another student ambassador I was working with, Oliver Lupton from School of Digital Arts in MMU. We use generative AI to help students create an image and in which they actually painted by hand afterwards. And that was such an engaging process in trying to see how they convert ideas or perceptions of what they want to paint into a physical painting and not just stop at the process of just an AI image.
Fantastic. Thank you very much. So I think one of the really interesting things that's already come through in this conversation and came through when we met previously and talked is how the way in which AI can be wielded in both your context, architecture and media, has a lot of similarities. And a lot of it is about that communication, about the creative process, about knowing what it is you want to achieve and knowing how AI can get you there. So what I would like to ask is, basically, I'd be grateful if you could tell me a bit about how AI fits into your creative journey. How are you using it? What techniques? But where is that complement with your wider skill set and your respective disciplines?
If I can jump in then, I think what's interesting, Tom, I see if Eugene agrees or disagrees. You spoke about using it when the students have a sense of what they know they want to achieve. And I actually, if I could be slightly devil's advocate with you, I think sometimes it's more important that you can use it as the sort of brainstorm at the start of the attempt for let me try some stuff, throw some stuff at a wall and see what sticks. I actually think it's when you don't know what you're doing that this can become an incredibly important and useful tool. And what I mean by that is, if we took sort of Five Life, we took Express out of the equation, to get a student to say, well, I'll tell you what, we've got four really good ideas there. Let's have a think about which could be like the better route forward. Which one do we think is going to be the most powerful, impactful, persuasive? Now, I think it would be really unfair of me to say to, I was going to say first year, but to be honest, any student, including masters, I think it practically would be unfair for me to say, right, students, you only actually need to embark on one project because we don't know which of the four is going to be most meaningful. Tell you what, let's start all four. That seems perhaps not an effective or efficient use of students' time. However, if we can bring a little bit of ethical, let's be again, Eugene's quite right, raising that early doors. If we can bring an ethical use of some of these AR tools early, we can actually start looking at 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 multiple different ideas in quite a efficient and effective time frame. And quite quickly, we do get to a sense of, okay, now I can see the lay of the land. Do you know what? For this reason, I'm going to follow through with perhaps this one. And it's not a student that's then really frustrated because they feel like they've wasted time and energy and effort, which isn't going to be visible in the final assessment. It's the opposite. Actually, they've had a really quick entry into, I've played around, I've got a really good sense of what's there. Now I can go quite confidently forward with this idea, because I've got a little bit, you know, in a relatively short frame of time, I've got a good sense of where it could take me. However, I think what I'll get Eugene to maybe say more about as he's on the ground with this is actually a lot of that learning journey is actually visible. So I'm slightly playing both sides here because I was making it sound like the student's learning journey only select parts are visible, but actually the beauty of the portfolio assignment certainly is member of staff, and I think Eugene would perhaps back that up in terms of as a student on the ground. I think the fact that making visible that learning journey, every part of it, was actually something that I think is a little bit more akin to a contemporary learning and teaching and assessment environment, which isn't how essays work and it's not how exams work. And if I can just put into the room, my daughter's about to kind of, she's currently in mid-GCSEs. So the idea of, I is a reminder that, remember in the maths, right? You also get points for workings, right? Show you workings. It's a little bit like that. The portfolio shows you workings. Where is that research? And that little bit of early adoption of AI to kind of choose which direction that project's going to lean into. Actually, I think the not knowing in order to then start knowing and to find the confidence, I think that's an important part of it.
I think that's a really, I'll just pick up on that point before handing over to Eugene about showing your workings out. And I know when we last spoke, you talked about the kind of processes and habits that you get students into of demonstrating why and explaining why they made certain choices of how they use a particular profile. So on Adobe Firefly, you've got a series of settings. You can look at the angle, you can look at the camera angle, you can look at the lighting, you can think about what objects and structure Could you are there any examples of the kind of ways that you've seen students show their working out on Firefly or on similar platforms?
There's one particular one that comes to mind. And if just to give you a little bit of an example, when students are thinking about, and sometimes they are actually choosing deliberately to tackle actually quite sensitive topics. So questions around mental health come up, perhaps unsurprisingly, foregrounds of the topics in a number of modules for students. And I want to make it really clear, of course, we're dealing with all appropriate content warnings. And again, being very kind of ethical and progressive, inclusive about how we're tackling these projects. But in a situation like that, a student could be thinking very clearly about, well, when people think about mental health, what are the routine images that would come up? What are the routine tone and language that which would be used? And really, we're thinking about social media. How is particular iterations of particular kind of mental health diagnoses routinely played to sort of certain code conventions? And the students, once they've embarked on a little bit of, actually, I say a little bit, that's absolutely not fair at all, a lot of robust and rigorous research, they start realizing there's a real disparity between the sort of snapshot on your social media about a mental health diagnosis and actually the reality of what that means on the ground. If you're looking at the actual, let's just say, NHS symptoms and kind of, you know, diagnosis and treatments. And so actually what our students are really, really incredibly good at is understanding that the research into a particular topic, such as mental health, more than hinted at, doesn't necessarily need to be written about in terms of an essay. Yes, an essay is good at demonstrating research and structure and arguments and particular kind of forms of appropriate language and referencing, but so too can creative posters, leaflets, zines, podcasts. They have most, you know, the bibliography and the research is really smaller. So in that situation, that would be a student that may very well do a short leaflet. And you might say, well, Rebecca, an essay is 5,000 words. This leaflet's barely got 500 words in it. Okay, but have a look at the images. It's also got 6 images. The images are very carefully created. And I'm not expecting my students to be graphic designers. I'm not expecting them to be fine artists. But what they are is creatively working with the brief, which they know is an ethical and progressive interpretation of how to present something like a mental health diagnosis. And again, the importance of that is, what does the research tell us? And then you've got a draft. So taking that to particular focus groups, what is the feedback again? So all the time, they are having to be really mindful and really measured and actually very reflective on their own research and creative practice in terms of, is this an appropriate, ethical, meaningful, persuasive way to basically narrate that story? And by narrate that story, I'm not trying to in any way take the seriousness away from a topic such as mental health, but the narrative around it. So I don't know, Thomas, that's enough of what you mean, but really that sense of, it's not a student going, oh, I like that font, that picture's jazzy, or do you know what? I haven't played with the leaflet buttons on InDesign. It's so much more than that. And so sometimes my frustration as a tutor, when I hear about, you know, grade inflation, or I hear about students have never had it so easy, I am fully irked. Yes, we do have an impressive array of learning and teaching tools that we can share with our students, but to use them ethically, to use them creatively, to use them responsibly, without dropping a second of the important kind of research that goes behind it, to make this work meaningful to audiences within and beyond an academic environment, I don't think students have ever had to work harder. I am never more proud than a current graduating cohort when I can see the effort they've put in. Let's not forget the fact that they are, can I do this? Forgive me. Let's not forget that they are also working in a climate crisis, a cost of living crisis. They've had the COVID epidemic. These students, certainly at Bath Spa, they're working on average 22 hours a week outside of university. So I am so proud of this generation and future generations of students working as hard as they do in these environments, making the most of every tool, including Adobe Suite. And obviously today we're talking about the Firefly. This allows them to work a little bit smarter rather than a little bit harder, to be a little bit more efficient and effective with their time. I couldn't be more proud of them. I would support that 100%. Sorry, Tom, may I go slightly off? Eugene, do you want to bring it back for me? You know where I'm trying to go.
I'll just sort of, but round up what I'm getting from that, I think, in terms of, so the two of you are the creative experts, and it's really interesting to learn about AI and this creative process. But what you're telling me there is that the creative process isn't just about that end output. You need to understand an issue that you want to communicate to someone. You need to give that a narrative, and you need to have an understanding of how the receiver of that is going to respond, what's going to be persuasive, what's going to strike a chord, what's going to stand out, be memorable. And so all of that knowledge and skill set kind of comes into producing something effective and meaningful. The AI is there to support in that process. It is one kind of one Lego block, if you like, within the whole kind of wall of this creative process. Eugene, could you tell me a bit about how AI and how you're using Adobe Firefly within the context of architecture?
Yeah, sure. So I really like Rebecca's point in saying that, you know, AI is really just a tool of communication. And well, in MMU, how we adopt AI is to not shy from it. But we also have got this strategy called the Delta strategy. So it's short form for digitally enhanced teaching, learning and assessment. Basically, it's a way of response to, you know, we can't just stop AI from becoming the future. It's definitely going to be there when students graduate from it. But how do we adapt students' learning and even help to improve their learning through this process? So there are multiple ways in which we use AI. For example, Rebecca did mention about creating different iterations. And iteration is just a part of the design process. I've got prototyping. Having AI in assisting this loop in the design process really helps to create bulk iterations when trying to explore new ideas, which also was something that Rebecca mentioned earlier. You know, some AI is not just being used for something when you know something exactly what you want, but also when you don't know what you want to achieve from it. And I definitely think that AI has got both potentials. So for creative students who knows what they want to create as a final output, Adobe Firefly has many controls for it. So Tom did mention about like the angles and the lighting that you can control. So it's very specific output that they want to achieve from it. And there are also ways in which you can actually just try and explore things that you have never thought about. And that's all part of iteration. And also, just like to mention how important iteration is in the design process. So James Dyson famously also did 5,127 prototypes and iterations before he successfully made his concept ready for manufacture. So you can imagine how long and how tedious that process is going to take. And by having AI in helping us create or simplify this process, or even trying to assist us in the making of things or trying to present an idea, it would really help artists and designers.
I was going to ask on the point about iteration. So for instance, when I'm using ChatGPT to help write a section of something, I will look at it and use my sort of knowledge of what I'm expecting in terms of tone, in terms of style of language. A lot of kind of latent knowledge will come to the fore to give me criteria with which to judge AI's output, and then often ask for an iteration. Could you give me a bit of an idea of how that works with the, you know, the sort of the vast specialist knowledge that you have as an architect? You've asked your platform Adobe Firefly for an image. You've thought very carefully about the settings, about the prompt. You've got your first output out. What's going through your head when you're judging that and thinking about, do I need another iteration to get what I'm looking for there?
Right. So there are multiple ways of doing iterations, and some people actually like to do the in-loop process, in which, you know, going through one step at a time and then using that feedback loop to help iterate further. Whereas some others also like to do a bulk iteration where you try to explore as wide range of an idea, sort of like casting a net to try and catch as many ideas as possible. I think they're both beneficial in their own ways. And as to at what point do you say to stop? I think design process is never ending, you know.
And so could the in a sort of an industry context, would you see the person giving the feedback as potentially a customer, a potential customer who you were working with on a particular project? It was them looking at whether their criteria have been met and giving feedback to that effect?
Yes, for sure. So for example, if a client were to come and ask for some like proof of concepts, I think that's a really common requirement in many like designer work. So you're trying to show a concept to the client in which you want to get their approval from. So instead of having to do something right from scratch again, I think we can actually use AI to quickly show an idea to them. And when it's being approved, that's when you can actually just continue with the process without having to tediously make multiple from scratch sort of ideas.
Excellent. Okay, I can see your hand is up. Did you want to come in on that point?
I did. It's absolutely fascinating. Again, I don't think we're a million miles apart, architecture and media, but also the broader sector, because I think it was really interesting, Eugene, you picking up the notion of the client. And I think that's worth just us sort of hovering on for a minute here, if that's okay, Tom. For obvious reasons, you know, multiple reasons, it's important that as tutors and universities, it's really important that we are thinking about the graduate employment opportunities for our students. It's not just about giving them a course, it's about supporting them, not with us, but also for when they leave, like preparing for when you. So this idea of working with clients, I think, is really important, both at undergraduate and postgraduate level. So the idea of creating something that is meaningful to a tutor within the framework of the module, I think that's part of the story. But certainly as you're moving towards those advanced sort of second, third year final projects, and absolutely, you know, Eugene and his master's work, absolutely the idea of working with the client, this living both within but beyond the university is really important. So this is where this idea of more authentic assignments come in. And I think this is absolutely where the entire Adobe suite, including Firefly, really kind of comes into its own here. Authentic assignments, working with clients, being able to demonstrate to those clients, and by extension to your tutors, obviously, and in the marking criteria, but you know, to demonstrate to those clients your both your professional flexibility, but also your creative agility. As Eugene was saying, the idea of going, oh, that's a really interesting update, thank you, can I take that away and come back to you in 2 weeks, perhaps isn't what, you know, contemporary clients are looking for and the pace that they need to work. So being able to be really fluid, if that's an okay term, you know, to be quite, you know, to have quite a lot of creative in the name and agency, which Firefly and the wider kind of suite does allow for, I think that's really important. And this isn't just about students getting particular marks in their assignments. It is also about demonstrating their professionalism, their professional creativity as they're building these networks. So actually what we're saying, again, but this isn't just architecture, this isn't just media, this is the UHE sector more generally, I think, or it certainly should be the direction of the sector, moving towards those more authentic assignments and clients and being responsive to client briefs. There is a time and a place for personal projects. There's also a time and a place for really having to do deep listening and respond to the client. And again, that ability to kind of use Firefly to be quite agile in that moment, I think is really, really useful, actually, for the student, for the tutor, and certainly hopefully for the client as well.
Yeah. Also, I think I want to add on to that is MMU also emphasizes that the outputs from these AIs have to really authentically reflect the student's ability. You know, you can't just create something that, you know, for sure you can't replicate yourselves, because then it's just, you're not actually trying to demonstrate your ability to make something, whereas you're just using AI to get you to the end point and that's it. You're not going to touch anything further. And one way we actually use this in our works is sort of to create storyboards, which is really essential in architecture. So the art of storytelling, of selling an idea, which Rebecca did mention before as well. And also many filmmakers use storyboarding to tell their story. And I think having these AI tools that would quickly be able to like just tell the story of how someone might go through the spaces they've designed for is really effective tool in communicating this idea of trying to sell this space or building to your clients.
That makes a lot of sense. But one of the things I wrote down in my notes was whether AI, in terms of increasing performance, is more about increased quality or increased quantity. But I think you've sort of answered that question by having this ability to make multiple iterations, being agile, that's a really good word to use, Rebecca, you consider a lot more ideas, you consider more perspectives, you've got a much broader sort of bird's eye view of the full kind of problem set that you're dealing with. And that's what allows you to get to a ultimately higher quality end goal. So it seems that quality, quantity, it's not a dichotomy. It's both, bringing both together. I think one of the things that you've both touched on is this idea of using these tools ethically within your context. I wonder if we'd spend just a few minutes talking about what that means. What does ethical, responsible use of AI in creative context mean to each of you? Rebecca?
Well, if I'm allowed to kind of slightly blow the trumpet of Adobe and Firefly for a moment, I think it's important that students understand why we're encouraging them to use Firefly in terms of where they've got those kind of image banks from and when we're using Adobe Stock, for example. So I think actually to explain to them the difference between using Firefly at the Adobe Suite that obviously their creative campuses have access to and the alternatives. So I think that's the starter for TEM. Why is it that we're saying this is the right way forward? In terms of using it ethically, I think it's really important that it gives students the opportunity to think about the prompts that they are putting in to maybe, and if I can be really honest, I think maybe students are not always immediately aware of their own privilege. And actually sometimes having this opportunity to prompt, to re-prompt, to have another look, to maybe share and kind of talk and discuss on the table and then to the class more generally. And it's staggering that if I was to set a brief, and I think students would know that I come from, I hope my research credentials would allow me to say, I hope I demonstrate my interest. I wouldn't dare go as far as expertise, but say interest, quality, diversity, and inclusion, particularly around representations of gender. So it's interesting to see where, if for any reason you need a face or a figure, how often they are thinking, do we automatically go to the older white male? Do we? And when they've realised, and then they perhaps reset, readjust, make room for kind of alternative kind of faces and spaces. But also around disability, I spend quite a lot of time talking to my students about disability. Now, of course, there are many hidden disabilities, but there are also a number of very visible disabilities. So actually ensuring that at every stage, when you're thinking about who we're showing, who we looking to speak on behalf of, whose narrative, we've talked about storytelling narrative, whose story we're telling, whose narrative are we trying to demonstrate? I think there's a couple of things. Is this story important? Is this narrative important to share? Is this a narrative, a story that there needs to be awareness around more widely? And am I the right person to tell it? And if I am, how can I tell that in a kind of a really thoughtful, progressive manner? So I think that notion of being able to quite quickly visualize something and then to maybe recalibrate, to rethink, to just ensure that they have actually thought, not in a tokenistic way, but in actually quite a meaningful way in relation to their topic, have I presented this in a genuinely inclusive way? So I think that the fact that it does give us that moment to be able to pause and reflect, I think is really important to being ethically aware and progressively mindful. Eugene, what about you? In terms of the ethics from architecture, again, is that more for you about the buildings or the people in the buildings or how you pitch it to the client?
Right. Well, I think my thoughts about ethical AI is more so on the designers and creatives, because I think a lot of designers have reservations about, you know, the use of AI these days. And what I like to say to them is, and it's also quoted by Scott Belsky, who posed this question at Adobe Max, is, are we replacing humans or unlocking uniquely human potential? My answer to that is AI won't replace humans, but people who know how to use it will replace those who don't. And it's definitely much better to be the person who understands and uses it ethically than someone who doesn't and gets left behind. I think for sure digital literacy is an essential skill in any creative industry these days. But I would like to also mention about the transparency that needs to be talked about with AI. And this dialogue between technologists and artists needs to ensure that AI is being used in a way that respects the rights of creators. And one way that Adobe has done this very right is with content credentials. So AI is not being trained in the process of a creator's works, but in many ways, like Adobe Stock and other image. So just want to iterate that transparency is definitely having also to credit AI when it's being used in the courseworks, which is quite essential and being emphasized to show that this is not something that you have produced with your own hands, but you know, it's trying to convey an idea that is trying to convey your idea in your academic work. Yeah.
Eugene, that's fascinating. Forgive me, listeners. I can't work out if it was a laugh or an intake of breath when you had that really kind of potent message of, no, the AI isn't replacing humans, but the humans with AI kind of skills and expertise and competences will replace those that don't. That was really, yeah, sorry, you absolutely kind of took my breath away for a moment there, but because yes, I couldn't agree more. And I think in terms of, well, I totally agree with that notion of being ethical. Again, it's the idea of referencing. When have we ever not asked students to reference the academic work, the kind of tools, the voices they are leaning into, you know, maybe MLA, you know, we use Harvard. But again, so using Firefly and using Adobe, it's both groundbreaking, but it's also just another piece of the toolkit. We ask students to reference, you know, in the same way we'd ask them to image reference, we ask them to kind of talk to us about the prompts. And again, be, as you've exactly said, transparent. I am going to pick up one thing though, and I don't know if this is the difference between subjects, if this is the difference between tutor and students, or this is the difference between generations. The notion of that you clearly have a real confidence with your ability to use Firefly and your Adobe Suites, that absolutely comes through loud and clear. I've got less confidence. So yes, I am a media. I'll be working at a media team, but I'll be really honest, I'm a media scholar. I'm a feminist, a media theorist. So I don't necessarily walk in the world with the confidence that you present in relation to how to use Adobe, but I have to be really honest, looking at Express as your starter bit end, leaning into Firefly. If I can do it, anyone can do it. And it makes teaching and learning fun and engaging. But if anybody out there is going, well, this all sounds very well and good, but I don't have the time to upskill in. So for example, you know, the bigger InDesign or something, there's a lot that you can do that what I'm going to politely call kind of more basic, more entry level, with Firefly, with Express. And I think for most of us as creative campuses, of course, we have building technical teams. So when it does get that little bit more complicated, I don't necessarily think I am. I'm not, and I wouldn't necessarily need to be the person to bring that next level skill set to the students. I feel very grateful at Barspire, and I don't think I'll be alone as an institution here, where we are supported by the most brilliant technical staff who have the other skill sets to share with students. So there is an entry level for all of us. I genuinely believe that. And then if as a student or a member of staff, or as a subject or a cohort, you do want to kind of push further through the offerings, my goodness, there are staff absolutely geared up and could definitely replace anyone because of their competencies and professional skill set with AI. But I just wanted to let anyone listening just thinking, well, this isn't for me. It doesn't necessarily need to be new. You have to have the idea of how to use it with your students. We absolutely can lean into the kind of the alternative and the general and the different skill sets around the campus to get support with that learning and teaching vision.
No, thank you for that, Rebecca. And I do think that hearing from your experiences, both of you, is one of the things that really is going to spur people's confidence. And I think it's understanding how to use these technologies purposefully, how they can help people meet aims that they already have for themselves and can help to amplify the skills that they cherish and they value in themselves, I think is part of the journey of confidence. So I think your insights have been really helpful in that regard. I feel like I've learned a lot in this context. I'm not someone who would necessarily say I am, you know, a creative native, but you've really sort of made me think about the overall process, what it means to be creative, about having, even if only sort of implicit and latent, an idea of what a good product looks like, bringing your kind of expertise and skill sets and domain knowledge to bear there. But I've also got a sense of just how human the creative process is. You talked about, Rebecca, the ability of just sort of bringing people together, sparking discussions at the beginning of a course, and just where previously you might have had, you know, sort of awkward conversations perhaps. Eugene, you've talked a lot about the iterative process, and there what I'm getting is this idea that, you know, you can be a specialist in your field, but you need ways of knowing what's in somebody else's head who's not necessarily, you need to help crystallize their vision using your specialist skills and actually having tools that can add the volume so that you find the right solution really help there. So I think, yeah, I've learned loads about how AI can fit into the creative process, how it can enhance those skills and enhance the overall output. I wondered if, in terms of wrapping up, whether you've got any kind of just one bit of further advice, and this could be for students, for staff, for leaders in higher and further education, one kind of takeaway that would help people to start using and benefit from these kind of tools in their own contexts.
Am I allowed to jump on that one? If it's okay to do so, I would like to bring in the voice of the sadly passed Sir Ken Robinson, who spoke eloquently over many decades about the power of creativity in education and sadly our lack of investment in creativity in education. And that's always stayed with me, that we seem to spend much of the formative years of our students, certainly as we take them through FE and HE, and we seem to kind of value creativity less and less and less. And so they start to value it less and less and less. And then we wonder why, but why, you know, when we're asking them to be creative, we wonder why they don't see themselves as creators. So my little kind of thought, I think, to take away was, I don't think you need to spend too long with Firefly to kind of reignite that creativity, both as tutors and also with students. So we used to do this thing where we would kind of start a creative exercise and just get a sense of who's feeling like they are a creative. Sadly, not enough hands go up, because of course, what you would hope is that every single person in every single classroom, from law to architecture to wildlife conversation and back to me in media, you would hope that everybody would feel creative in some way, but don't necessarily see themselves in that way. And I just wonder if Firefly is a little road for us to bring some of that back, to allow them to see that through kind of fun and engagement and through conversation, those tiny little prompts, what might seem playful, I think is actually quite a powerful way for us to reignite creativity in the classroom and beyond.
That's brilliant. Thank you. Eugene?
Well, for me, the main takeaways from this is, well, it depends whether you think that AI is for you or not, because it is there and you can actually use it for your own advantage. For designers, of course, if you prefer to use the traditional methods, then by all means, but it also would open additional dimension through this use of AI, and you don't know the designs that you're missing out on until you've tried. And that comes through lots of iteration and exploration. So, yeah.
Brilliant. That's great. And I realize that sort of chimes with me a little bit. People are sort of been told what you said, Rebecca. People are made to feel they're not creative, perhaps because of how the education system has worked in the past. And yes, I'm reflecting on some of the work that we did recently with an AI pilot at JISC around image generation. And what I found really enjoyable was that process of crystallizing a vision. I didn't necessarily know the visual elements that were going to help with that vision, but I could use AI to help me to find out, to trial and error. And yes, and I think on reflection, what you said about going, trying really can sort of ignite something creative. And Eugene, your point is excellent. I think AI is something that I do try and use as much as possible and integrate into my workflows. And I think for those who might feel less confident, I think thinking about it in terms of what you can get from it, not, you know, whether you should use it or not, is always a good starting point. Brilliant. Well, thank you so much. Sorry, Rebecca.
Sorry, as we were talking, can I just sneakily cheeky put one more in there?
Yeah, absolutely.
And again, it's back to listening to your summary there and then thinking back to Eugene's brilliant comments earlier. And it's this idea of what is the place for the human? And as we're wrapping up and talking about creativity and that link between creativity and AI, I think one of the things that is important is it's not about the AI, it's about the human behind it. And I think this seems to be a generation where authenticity is so important. People feeling that they are seen and visible and valued. And I think that idea of just thinking that a machine did something, but an algorithm did something, but that a piece of software did something, I don't think in and of itself that is powerful. I think what is powerful and persuasive is knowing that there is a person and a voice and a story behind it. So yeah, whether that's the third iteration of your kind of design for that building, or my students kind of trying to kind of make more progressive kind of awareness raising around a particular mental health diagnosis. I think the human behind the algorithm really is everything. and I'm really new to going.
No, for sure. I think that's a really good point, because I feel like AI can sometimes homogenize the aesthetics of what is being created. And I'm sure you might have seen the recent controversy with like the Studio Ghibli trend online, where people sort of use AI to make their own photographs to the style of Studio Ghibli. But what's missing there is definitely the personal touch of, you know, the hand-drawn drawings that goes through the feeling, the human touch of that AI could not replicate. And that's where the artist and this personalization and the authenticity of artists comes in.
Excellent. And I can see from the points that you've made that you could still use AI tools for the storyboarding to get the ideas, to think about what would work in practice if you did want to then go and execute your skills with your skills of, you know, being a, you know, dab hand with a brush in your hand. Like you can still bring AI into the workflow, even if your preference is to stick to the old-fashioned tools for the end goal. Fantastic. This has been a brilliant conversation. I think it's really helped me understand quite a lot about how AI fits into the creative process and how it can make all of us more creative. And to think that's, I think a real takeaway for me is to, we should all think of ourselves as creatives, not just, you know, based on our disciplines, but as people, and AI really can fit into that workflow. Thank you so much for your time, Rebecca and Eugene. It's been fantastic speaking to you. And yeah, hope you have a great rest of your day. Thank you, everyone, for listening.
Thank you, Tom, for the invite. And Eugene, I cannot wait to see those final designs for your final work, if you'd be so kind just to share them with me. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks so much, Rebecca and Tom. See you.